Welcome to OnkLive On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wainer. OnkLive On Air is a podcast from OnkLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, OnkLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Andrew J. Armstrong, MD, MSc, about the FDA approval of olaparib plus abiraterone in patients with BRCA-mutated metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer. Armstrong is a professor of medicine, a professor in surgery, and a professor of pharmacology and cancer biology, as well as a member of the Duke Cancer Institute in Durham, North Carolina. On May 31, 2023, the FDA approved olaparib plus abiraterone and prednisone or prednisolone in patients with metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer harboring deleterious or suspected deleterious BRCA mutations. This regulatory decision was backed by findings from the Phase 3 PROPEL trial, in which the median radiographic progression-free survival was not reached in patients with BRCA mutations who received the olaparib combination versus 8 months in those with BRCA mutations who received placebo plus abiraterone. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Armstrong discussed the significance of this approval, key efficacy and safety data from PROPEL, and where the field of prostate cancer research may be headed in the future. What is the significance of this approval, and how do you see it affirming or changing current practice patterns?
The major unmet need for men with metastatic hormone-resistant or castration-resistant prostate cancer are therapies that can delay progression and ultimately lead to improved survival. The first-line therapy for such men has traditionally been enzalutamide or abiraterone, provided that those drugs haven't been received before. And so the PROPEL study was really the first study to demonstrate a significant improvement beyond that standard of care in delaying radiographic progression-free survival. And so seeing in an unselected group of patients, the efficacy of a PARP inhibitor extending this primary endpoint and also translating into improved survival is really meaningful for my patients and patients around the world to have that option for an agent that can improve their efficacy. It's not without risks, but it's good to have options when you're meeting patients in this first line setting.
What are the mechanisms of action of olaparib and abiraterone, and how did these mechanisms support the rationale to combine them in this population?
Sure. So abiraterone is an androgen synthesis inhibitor that has downstream effects in blocking androgen receptor biology. Androgen receptors known to be important in the metabolism and the differentiation of prostate cancer cells, and blocking that improves survival. But for this study, it's also important to realize that AR is important in DNA repair. And blocking AR, such as what we do with radiation therapy in early disease, can be a potent radiosensitizer. And in this context, we're blocking AR to be a PARP inhibitor sensitizer. PARP inhibitors are further agents that can block DNA repair through an enzyme that's an important proofreader in the cancer cell. So the dual mechanism of blocking AR in terms of its DNA repair and blocking PARP as a backup mechanism of repair is the basis for this broad unselected patient population. Clearly, there are going to be patients that are more vulnerable to this inhibition in terms of their tumors having greater efficacy with this dual blockade, those that have inherited or acquired mutations in homologous repair enzymes, such as BRCA2, are clearly benefiting more. But the purpose of PROPEL was to really show efficacy in a broad patient population.
Is there anything else that you wanted to say about the design of this trial?
PROPEL was really a first-line mCRPC study. Patients could not have had prior enzalutamide, apalutamide, darolutamide, or abiraterone. They were unselected for the presence of homologous repair deficiencies, although all patients were characterized as such and analyzed later according to the benefits and risks. And the comparison was against abiraterone acetate and prednisone. All patients received that standard of care therapy plus ongoing androgen deprivation therapy. Another important thing to realize was that the primary endpoint was rPFS according to working group 3 criteria. And this is an important meaningful endpoint. Many patients, when they have mCRPC, really do do not necessarily receive second or third line therapy because radiographic progression can often be a major cause of symptomatic deterioration and morbidity. And many patients in the community are not receiving subsequent therapy. So really delaying progression was the objective of this unselected phase three trial. Overall survival was a key secondary objective and was statistically powered to answer this. But as you know, many life-prolonging therapies are now available for these patients, and it's increasingly more and more difficult to demonstrate overall survival benefits because of the availability of olaparib and other life-prolonging therapies in second-line therapy and beyond.
What were some of the key efficacy data from this trial?
The primary endpoint was investigator-assessed radiographic progression-free survival, and this has already been published and presented at prior meetings and in the New England Journal of Medicine evidence. And this showed a hazard ratio of 0.66, which translated into a median improvement in rPFS of about 8 months. Using blinded independent review of all images, we also showed that the radiographic progression-free survival was improved by 11 months, so even better with independent blinded review. Key secondary endpoints were recently updated at the GU symposium, and a manuscript is in process for the overall survival benefits. And here we show a 7-month improvement in overall survival. This hazard ratio, while the p-value did not meet the pre-specified alpha error, the study was not powered for overall survival, but it's really encouraging to see that the delay in progression-free survival translated into improved survival long term. Importantly, subgroups of patients that had greater benefits were those with homologous repair deficiencies, HRR mutations, particularly BRCA2.
You mentioned some of the risks associated with this combination. Can you expand on some of those risks and basically what the safety profile looks like overall?
Sure. So there were no really unexpected risks with this combination. We know that PARP inhibitors like olaparib can result in grade 3 anemia, and we saw that in about 20% of patients, where as an investigator, as a physician who will be using olaparib and has used it for many years, you have to be prepared in some patients to dose reduce, dose interrupt, and maybe give a blood transfusion. Finding that right dose for that patient long term is critical to sustaining quality of life and reducing fatigue and blood transfusions. But PARP inhibitors as a class can have this side effect, although different PARP inhibitors will have a higher risk of this. But olaparib is about 20% of patients had what's called grade 3-4 anemia. We also see a little bit of nausea, a higher incidence of fairly asymptomatic pulmonary emboli in a few percent of patients. There were some interesting side effects, and it's important to realize that this would be increased pill burden and increased costs and potentially financial toxicity, all of which will need to be taken into consideration against the greater efficacy that was observed.
How do you see this combination fitting into the overall treatment paradigm for this population?
One of the major limitations of these first-line mCRPC studies like PROPEL and TALAPRO is that we're now using potent AR inhibitors in the metastatic hormone-sensitive setting or the non-metastatic CRPC setting. And so the field has moved towards the earlier use of potent AR inhibitors to delay progression, and that leads to better survival. And so the field also needs to consider and study these PARP inhibitors along with potent AR inhibitors where they're being used with the greatest efficacy. And I think data such as PROPEL and TALAPRO-2 should lead into new phase three studies, which are ongoing in the hormone-sensitive settings. It's important to realize that there are some trade-offs with moving trials into earlier settings because now patients are going to be on these drugs for even longer. And we do worry about blocking DNA repair for such long periods of time that may increase the risk of secondary malignancies, myelodysplastic syndrome. So these studies will have to be followed very carefully for these longer term side effects. I think important aspects for patient care beyond just delaying radiographic progression and having an impact on survival is also how the patient feels. In the PROPEL study, we generally found that the combination did not lead to a deterioration in quality of life. We did see greater objective responses, better PSA outcomes, better ability to delay subsequent therapies such as docetaxel chemotherapy. And as you're discussing this option with patients, it's important to talk about some of those secondary outcomes and the impact on this decision.
Are you or Duke involved in any ongoing prostate cancer research that you'd like to highlight while we're here today?
Absolutely. We know that patients ultimately will progress despite our best efforts with potent AR inhibitors, with or without PARP inhibitors. And so investigating novel therapies is an area of active emphasis for Duke. And we are part of the Department of Defense Prostate Cancer Clinical Trial Consortium, really seeking to develop new therapies or combinations to end death and suffering of men with advanced prostate cancer. Like you've heard, we're moving therapies into earlier settings to try to improve cure rates in the hormone-sensitive setting, but also developing new therapies that might be tested first in the group of patients with the greatest unmet need, whether that's neuroendocrine or small cell prostate cancer or tumors that are still, dependent on the androgen receptor. So developing newer hormonal therapies, molecular targeted therapies, radioligand therapies, immunotherapies, and combination approaches is really how we're taking a broad net in clinical trials. So it's really important to refer patients for trials and to think about research as we're not done with just this study.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Onclive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onclive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onclive and at OnclivesOSS. On Facebook, like us at OnClive and OnClive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OnClive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OnClive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OnClive On Air.